and welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have the chair of the Division of Gastroenterology at Einstein, Dr. Michael Goldberg, and welcome.
Hello, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here today, because we're going to be talking about GI issues, and in particular today we're talking about colorectal cancer. And so I'm going to begin this with either the dumbest question or the best. What is colorectal cancer?
Sure. So, I mean, colorectal cancer, people think of it as many different things. And essentially, it is cancer anywhere within the colon or rectum. The rectum is the very end part of the colon. And cancer involving any of those areas would be considered colorectal cancer.
We hear the terms colon cancer. We hear bowel cancer. If you're older, you hear, and today we hear anal cancer as well, because of Farrah Fawcett and her work with awareness. Are all of these interrelated, or are they describing the same thing?
They're all relating to the same thing, except for anal cancer. That would be a separate entity. So the colon cancer, rectal cancer is what we're talking about and what we're trying to put all our efforts towards prevention for. But the anal cancer is a separate entity that we would not be really involved with this.
Okay. So how many people are affected by this? What are we talking about here?
So many, many. So colon cancer is the third most common cancer, and it's the second most common cancer-related disease to be causing death.
Ooh.
Yes. So very, very serious. And it's very pervasive. It's actually on the rise. Especially in certain populations and certain age groups.
I was going to ask you, yeah. Well, actually, if you know what causes it at this point, but let's first start then with, if it's on the rise, who is getting this? Does this cross gender, race, ethnicity?
It's a wonderful question. So there's several different things. One, we've seen an increase in the number of cases in people that are younger, meaning less than age 50. And also, those people tend to have worse disease when they're diagnosed. So it's a more aggressive, younger onset of disease that we're seeing now. Over 10% of the cases of colon cancer diagnosed last year were under the age of 50.
Oh, gosh. And even I know that 50 has always been like the standard answer. So when should you start looking into these kinds of diseases?
So there's several different societies and recommendations from these different societies. Currently, the American Cancer Society was concerned about these newer onset of colon cancers that we were diagnosing, and have changed their recommendation for an average risk person. We can go into the specific things that make people average risk or high risk, and down to 45.
Whoa.
Now, it's already been suggested to start at age 45 for those patients in these higher risk ethnicities, ethnic groups, and that would be African Americans and Hispanics are at an increased risk.
This is beyond age.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So
several different factors.
All right. So I'm going to guess, obviously, environment, genetics, et cetera, are going to be a play in this. But do we have an idea why younger people are getting this? And here's a little anecdote here. A friend of mine who just had her 50th birthday went in for her screening because she hit the magic 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, now she's had a bowel resection. She had a baseball-sized cancer within her colon. And that 50, that magic 50 screening, yeah, found it, but it found it when it was again, baseball-sized cancer.
Now, can I ask you, did she have any symptoms?
No.
So that is I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's so important to put that out there, that the time we want to be doing these screenings is when you do not have symptoms. Now, of course, if you have symptoms, you need to see your physician and we need to deal with those. But if you are not having symptoms, that is the ideal time to be getting these procedures. Your friend sounds like they caught it early enough where they were able to do a resection, and hopefully they'll have a good survival. I mean, if we find these colon cancers in stage one or stage two, these early stages, there's over approximately 90% 5-year survival rate if it's these early stages.
So hers must have been growing when she was, I don't know how fast this goes on, but if she hadn't had that test, it would have been far worse, obviously.
Correct. And if it gets to where it spreads, then the survival, the 5-year survival rate does go down. And again, that gets into the whole, you don't want to wait until you have symptoms. This is a feeling fine type of screening that you want to be doing, and it should just be in your normal general health maintenance.
Okay, well, if we're talking about Hispanics and African Americans, there might be something genetic going on that we're looking at as well. But when it's getting younger, is that environment? What's the cause of colorectal cancer?
So we don't know. We don't know the exact cause. If we did, we would tell everybody to stop it and we wouldn't have to worry about this anymore. So we don't know exactly. We know there are several things that we can do to decrease our risk of colon cancer. Those things are living a healthy lifestyle, avoiding obesity, trying to avoid excessive alcohol, try to avoid red meats and not completely, but not excessively. And smoking cessation. Mm-hmm. So overall good health maintenance things, but we have not identified anything specific in those with colon cancer versus those without that predispose those people to be having it or something that they were doing that was causing it.
So we don't know if it's our processed food diet you just mentioned the proper diet.
Yeah.
So is it? Are you doing research in this? Because, of course, we are going to vaguely hit upon the fact that there is the Colorectal Cancer Alliance is right now in a huge campaign to make us all aware of all of these issues and to get us screened. But so obviously somebody's out there caring. And what's the research going into this? So are we looking at a cure or are we looking at prevention?
Both. And a lot of the research currently is delving into these younger onset cases and to look at what possible congenital or, things that could be relating to that and why they developed it earlier. And like I said, when we're finding them, they're already at these advanced stages in these younger cases. So we're still doing everything we've been doing for the general population, looking for all the research for that. But every institution that I know of here has some ongoing research into this. And the Alliance has been, pivotal in helping to support all of the institutions in the area. There, because the Alliance is a nonprofit organization that has really targeted Philadelphia as one of the, due to the fact that we've been identified as one of the cities with one of the lowest rates of colon cancer screening in the country.
Mm-hmm. Can we back it up just a little bit? Because you said congenital. So we all know about women today and the BRCA gene. We all are aware of this. Is there a genetic play in the colon cancer and colorectal cancers?
So in the general type of colon cancer that we're talking about, we have not identified specific. They're looking at several right now. Now, there are some disease processes that can predispose you to having things like colon cancer and congenital. Now, again, these would be, it's much more rare to have these, and you're usually identified at a much, much earlier age, 20, 30, those types of things with, hundreds and hundreds of polyps and symptoms. And those people, if in their family, talking about congenital, they can be tested for genetic mutations that would predispose them to having colon cancer or be at risk for colon cancer. We take certain measures for those patients. Now, the other for specific identified colon cancer genes, there are several that they're looking at. None are used by everybody consistently.
But yet, when you mention at your, when you're with your physician and you mention that you had parents or grandparents, siblings who've mm-hmm. been diagnosed, your screening age goes down considerably. So is it familial?
So there is definitely an increased risk in patients that have family members. So the way it works for putting patients we talked about earlier, average risk versus an increased risk. So increased risk would include people with a first degree relative with colon cancer. And it also depends, we look at the different ages that person was diagnosed. So if it's over or under the age of 60, but in general, you're looking to start colon cancer screening if you have a first degree relative or two second degree relatives with colon cancer 10 years prior to the earliest person that was diagnosed with colon cancer or age 40, whichever would come first.
Hmm.
So some people get start getting screened at age 35 if they were they had a family member with age 45. So and then that also changes the surveillance interval, meaning when the next colonoscopy would be due. I get that asked that question a lot after we finish a colonoscopy, and I tell, hey, great, no polyps, and you're good for 10 years. And they said, what, do I have to come back? So it's still, we still have to continue to work on our message, but I still am very appreciative and happy that they're coming in for their screening colon.
I've got to say this. I've never met anyone who had a colonoscopy who didn't say, it wasn't anything, and dang, I like that nap.
So everybody loves the nap. They get mad at me when I wake them up after the procedure.
It's great. And we're going to delve into that.
Yes.
And now, so if you've got a father or your mom had colon cancer and you're at greater risk, is that you both had the same crappy diet from wherever you happen to be raised, and that might affect it? But how does, because we talked about, again, Philadelphia is a very poor city. We know that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking, does money play into this at all? Diet, medical attention, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think you're hitting it, you're saying it exactly correct. So I believe that it is definitely, there are several factors involved. I believe that there is some environmental contribution as well. Definitely, we know there's congenital or family history of, and then there's possibly these other factors that is where we're trying to intervene and find what could these unifying factors that we find in people with colorectal cancer that we could start telling people to avoid.
When you pick out Philadelphia for any mm-hmm. kind of a survey, that's the first thing that comes to mind, that we are poor and we're older. Yeah. We have huge populations of every ethnicity. It's a great little melting pot, but it's a poor one. And so when you pick us for anything, that's always the first thing that comes to mind.
It is. And it basically is setting up these barriers for patients to easily get screened for your routine screenings. And that's really what something else I did want to mention, how the ability of certain of different people and different socioeconomic classes and things like that, it differs of their ability to be able to get that medical care that they need. If you don't have health insurance, I think the average for everything all said and done to have a colonoscopy without insurance is something like $1,700. That was like an average I saw, and that's very expensive for patients to be able to have to pay out of pocket. Now, any health insurance plan, all of them that I am aware of, do cover a screening colonoscopy. So if you have health insurance, it should be covered by your insurance. This also will get into there are different modalities for screening for colon cancer. The current guidelines from several different societies recommend really two different categories of testing. One of them would be a stool-based testing, mm-hmm. and one would be direct visualization, meaning a colonoscopy. There's pros and cons to both of them. I can start with the stool-based testing. There's no procedure. There's no sedation. You don't have to take off of work. This is something you can do at home.
Mm-hmm. Is there any prep for it?
So for the stool-based testing, there's you want to avoid things like certain medications like iron and things like that before testing it. But that's really it. The problem is it's not the easiest thing to do, and not the some people have issues with dealing with that. So, which I understand, but it is, again, it's a minimal impact on their daily life. The issue,
it's also very private.
It's very private, and these are, send out tests and they come back. There are some issues with it in that you have to do it every single year. So unless you do something called ColoGuard, which is recommended every 3 years, it's not currently covered by all insurances, but more and more are starting to cover it. And if a positive test is found on one of these, then you still have to have a colonoscopy. We also don't know the rate of these tests to be finding these very small polyps that we could see on other testing. But they are currently completely recommended by the, you know, the societies and are adequate colon cancer screening.
Well, tell what we're doing with a, with one of these stool-based.
Very good point. Well, so basically, you're looking for they're looking for microscopic blood in the stool that might be slowly oozing or slowly coming from a polyp or a cancer. That's what you're looking for in the stool-based testing.
Okay.
Now, so that would be all the stool-based testing. And they're getting better and better. And the tests themselves are getting better and better. And the rates of what we call false positives, a positive comes up, but the colonoscopy looks okay, is less and less. But it still happens.
And even I know that's because you could have tears at the end of your tract, hemorrhoids, et cetera, can be in there.
Yeah, they should. The tests are supposed to not, because that's actual blood. We're looking more for the breakdown products of blood. So that does happen where you can get a false positive sometimes from those things. But in general, the test is supposed to be looking for those microscopic breakdown versus the actual blood itself. So, but yes, there are several confounding factors, but it is an adequate stool-based test, adequate colon cancer screening. And if that's what the only thing you can do, it's definitely the best thing for you.
But that diligence is involved here. You need to do it consistently.
Every single year.
What's the cost for something like that?
So it's very low. I don't know the exact amount, but it's very, it's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most health insurances do cover it.
Okay. You know what? We're at the halfway point. Here is where I always say that this is Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis. Today we are talking with Dr. Michael Goldberg, and he is the chair of the Division of Gastroenterology at Einstein Hospital. And if you'd like more information about anything that we are talking about today, go to getscreened.org. The folks at Colorectal Cancer Alliance have information there for you. It outlines everything. It talks about everything that we are discussing today. Getscreened.org. Now, let's go into the colonoscopy because you mentioned the little P word, polyp.
Exactly.
What is a polyp and why are they so important in this discussion?
So polyps are what transform into a cancer. And they are abnormal growths in the colon that start to take a different pathway. And once we start looking at abnormal cells, that's what we get concerned about that can progress to cancer. Not all polyps will turn into cancer, but there are polyps that harbor the abnormal cells that have the potential to cause cancer. So we call those precancerous polyps. And that's what we're seeing very commonly in males. It's approximately 30%. Females a little above 20%, and I think it's even higher than that, of patients that we're finding these precancerous polyps on. So first, basically, we had talked about the stool-based testing, and now, you know, for the direct visualization, the other recommendation for colon cancer screening is a colonoscopy. Now, I would like to first talk about some of the concerns and issues that people bring up about colonoscopy. Everyone always first brings up the bowel preparation. That is a large volume of fluid that you need to take usually the night before and the morning of the procedure, and it helps to clean out the colon. When we're doing a colonoscopy, we need to be able to visualize everything well, and it needs to be completely empty. That also entails some clear liquids, usually the day prior to the procedure. There are multiple studies out there now looking at how they can improve on our preparation and different diets we can do, but it involves some type of preparation. And people usually have concern over this. They've heard these horror stories of this fluids. And, I've done it, and it's not a pleasurable experience, but it is definitely something that can be done. And again, it's a means to an end. It's taking care of your health, your overall health.
And that wasn't a pun at
all. No, it was not at all.
And, oh, come on. You know what? In the prep and all of that stuff, it isn't anything you ain't done before. You know?
It's true. It's true.
It just wasn't planned.
Right. Now you're actually planning and you can plan. And the nice thing, again, is once you finish that prep, you come in for the procedure, you've done all the hard work, you're going to get put to sleep for the procedure. You don't have any pain, no discomfort. An average colonoscopy, the times vary somewhere around 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. Obviously, if there's polyps to be removed and lots of polyps, it takes a little longer. And we're able to visualize the entire colon all the way to the end part of the small bowel. And we look for any abnormal growths or abnormalities, and we can remove them at that time. That is a huge differentiation between colonoscopy or direct visualization versus the stool-based testing, is that we can take out those precancerous polyps at that time, and they don't pose any further threat other than putting you at risk for more precancerous polyps in the future, thus changing the amount of time interval that we do your colonoscopy.
And actually, what causes a polyp?
You know, it's an abnormal growth within the colon. We don't know the actual reason that starts the pathway down this different abnormal cells being created. But so the best we can do is look at these things that people with colon cancer have that they don't. And again, that's where the whole healthy lifestyle comes into play.
Okay. What are the symptoms? Obviously, you're saying we should do this before we have a symptom, because obviously a symptom means that something has gone pretty far along.
Correct.
Here. So what are some signs that we should get screened? And then we'll go into more about getting screened.
Yeah. I mean, so the symptoms that, you know, you should be discussing with your physician is any rectal bleeding, any bleeding in the stool, any, you know, abdominal pain, new onset changes in your bowel habits, new onset constipation, things like that should all be investigated. Those are the big things that I like to put out there of things to be looking at. But I always suggest if you have concerns, if you're not sure about something, it's the easiest thing is to bring it up with your physician and, you know, let them decide what needs to be looked into further at that point.
Now, why are people not getting the, is it because of the prep? Is it the embarrassment?
So yes, there's a stigma there. There's people are embarrassed. It depends on who we're talking about. I find that there are certain populations who just refuse to, to not only do the prep, but just don't want to be put in that position, don't want to have to deal with doing, you know, having people look at them and at their bottom and things like that. And for some people who really have an issue with that, you know, you can consider the stool-based testing. But the most important thing I just want to continue to put out there is you have to get screened. However, whatever modality you choose, you have to get screened, because it's so frustrating to have this, third most common cancer, and it's preventable. In a lot of cases, over 60, 65% of these are preventable. If you would have had their screening at the appropriate times, we take out that precancerous polyp and it doesn't ever cause cancer.
What is the Colorectal Cancer Alliance doing for all of this? And what's the ramifications of picking Philadelphia as this? You're obviously making the rounds and talking about this, but now, are there extra screenings? Are they, what's going on?
So, you know, the Colon Cancer Alliance initially began as more of to help patients that have already been diagnosed with colon cancer. And now they've moved into more of the prevention. They've targeted Philadelphia due to our low rate of colon cancer screening. And they've been pivotal in several aspects, their outreach, their marketing campaigns, just because it is so important to educate the population, educate everyone into who needs to get these colon cancer screenings, when they need to get them, and how do they get them. So they've just done an amazing job already. I know this next month where you're going to be inundated by things from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. And they've also supported all of the local institutions. For instance, we've created an advisory committee that is, we've met twice already, and we're looking to as a group come up with plans for the entire city of Philadelphia. specifically to obviously increase colon cancer screening rates and educate the population, as well as looking for ways that we can assist with getting over these hurdles and barriers that people have to getting screened.
Well, that's, well, it's one, it's education, but the other is insurance.
So it's a big point. You know, without insurance, again, it's, you know, close to about $1,700 for somebody to come up with. I don't know of any insurances currently that are not covering a screening colonoscopy, and I know that they're all covering stool-based testing as well. So if you have insurance, there's really no reason not to get screened.
And you know, those, the other kinds, you can actually buy them online.
It's true. It's true. You're exactly right. The something I did forget to say as well is the Alliance is actually working on looking into those without insurance and trying to find where we met with a group that did a similar thing in New York, and they came up with a citywide plan for the uninsured. And we're looking to do something along those lines. I don't know where we're going to end up with it, but the goal would be to come up with a citywide plan to increase colon cancer awareness and screening rates, and then use that throughout the country and other cities.
We're always a great test kitchen. Oh, but now the Alliance is around, though, year-round. And this, of course, is in March, which is Colorectal Cancer Month, mm-hmm. awareness. And you do stuff other than this. They actually have to do some fundraising there to pay for all of this. So what are some of the fun things? And are they looking for volunteers? And I'm going to guess donations are always appreciated.
Always looking for donations and to do the support of all of this education as well as research. And they do several fun events. One is the Undie Run. And then they also help support all of the local institutions, specifically at Einstein. We've had the Alliance at two of our recent outreach campaigns and events that we go to. So something we've created is, and as many of the institutions in the area, something called a direct access colonoscopy program. And what that allows for is somebody without major medical problems that is due for a colonoscopy can call this phone number, get screened on the phone, and then come in just for their colonoscopy. They don't even have to come in for an office visit. We're trying to make it, again, as easy as possible with as little barriers as possible.
Oh, that sounds nice. Well, now we are running out of time. And I mentioned volunteers. I mentioned donations, et cetera. GetScreened.org. And, of course, just look it up online. Colorectal Cancer Alliance. And you'll get more information. But now, parting words is prevention, prevention, prevention. Obviously, a screening is going to get those nasty little polyps. What are we supposed to do the rest of the time? Give us our marching orders. And I know exercise is one of them.
So of course, it's living a healthy lifestyle is going to, that's the number one thing we can say. And it's not just health maintenance here. It's health maintenance for all of your disease processes and making sure you're up to date on everything. But for colon cancer specifically, again, we want to decrease those processed foods, the red meat, stop smoking, make sure you're exercising. And it's an overall healthy lifestyle. If you are having symptoms, you definitely want to talk to your physician. But if you're at the age when you're due, it's so important to just speak with your physician and get screened. And if you do colonoscopy and you're average risk and you don't have family history and there's no polyps, you're good for 10 years.
You can't pick your parents, but you could pick broccoli over the processed cheeseburger.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, are we supposed to be eating our broccoli? I always heard roughage was important.
So fiber is always good. It helps prevent pretty common things such as diverticulosis or hemorrhoids and things like that. And those can all be helped by increasing the fiber in your diet.
So I'm out to buy a box of grape nuts and broccoli. And well, thank you for coming in today.
Truly been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, my guest today has been Dr. Michael Goldberg. He is chair of the Division of Gastroenterology at Einstein Hospital. The Colorectal Cancer Alliance working hard to make sure that we do not become one of those folks who are... How many percentage-wise again?
So it's the third most common cancer in the U.S. right now.
third most common cancer, and that is, of course, colorectal cancer. The message, of course, get screened, get informed, and do that by going to getscreened.org. That's getscreened.org for more information about everything that we have talked about today, or look them up, Colorectal Cancer Alliance. And again, my guest today, the chair of the Division of Gastroenterology at Einstein, Dr. Michael Goldberg. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.